This month, millions of college students are back in school or headed there. Many will focus on books, lectures, and cram sessions. Others may be more interested in the social side of higher education, tailgate parties, beer bongs, and jello shots. Of course, some universities have reputations as party schools. For 13 years now, the New York company Princeton Review has included an annual list of the top party schools among its more sober rankings. As you might expect, this is no laughing matter for the schools involved, but how did they get that reputation, and what do they have to do to get rid of it? This hour, we'll find out how the list is compiled, what it means for the colleges on the list, and what they're doing to change their image. Later, a battle of the bands at the University of Virginia, where a traditional marching band has largely supplanted the more anarchic scramble band. But first, party schools. If you decided for or against a college based on its image as a party school, give us a call. If you attend college or work at one, what's your school doing about underage drinking and binge drinking? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Robert Franek is the author of the Princeton Review's Best 357 Colleges, and he joins us now from our bureau in New York. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
First, let's clarify who you are. The Princeton Review should not be confused with Princeton University. Tell us a little bit about your organization.
Sure. We're an education and testing company. We were founded in 1981 to help students take the SAT, and we've branched out to many standardized tests, as well as giving students college admissions as well as graduate school admission advice.
So how do you figure out which schools rank as a best party school?
Well, a couple of things. We go directly to the consumers. We reached out to 110,000 students, and as you said before, the best 357 colleges in the country. And we asked them everything from academics to quality of life, but of course, social life. So we talked specifically about coming up with our party school list by thinking about rate of consumption of beer, hard liquor on campus, drugs on campus. This goes into several different categories of drugs. And then popularity of fraternities and sororities on campus, and then hours of study spent outside of the classroom.
And before we go too far with this, obviously
sure.
You do the best 357 school. You do a lot of other rankings too.
Absolutely. There are 64 different top 20 rankings in the book, from best overall academic experience to class discussions rare to party schools.
Okay. Now, this party school ranking, is this meant to be taken seriously?
It should be taken seriously. And I think the part that most schools, especially those schools that come up on our party school list, have trouble with is that it's something that students are not going to read about in a view book. But I feel that it's the mission of the Princeton Review and certainly of the best 357 colleges to get the information out there that a kid is not going to find in a college view book. So certainly talking about what their academic experience is going to be, but we all know that college is going to be a social experience as well. And that doesn't have to just mean party schools, but it could mean acceptance of a gay community on campus, diversity on campus. There are lots of other things that make up that college experience for an undergrad.
Now, party schools is what we're focusing on. Do you find the same schools coming up year after year after year?
We see a lot of schools come up year after year. Our number one school this year, State University of New York at Albany, has been on this on the list for several different years. Some other usual suspects have come up. University of Texas at Austin, Colorado Boulder was our number one school last year. That has actually slipped down to the number nine position.
And again, you talk to a lot of people. Is this survey that you do, would you call it a scientific survey?
I would call it the best consumer report type survey that's out there. We go directly to whom we would consider college experts. I think I know a heck of a lot about colleges, but we reach out to students who are in the classes, in the trenches, and ask them questions about their quality of life.
And what reactions do you get from schools and from parents, for that matter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and again, I mean, the focus is for college-bound kids, their families, and of course, guidance counselors to help them with some smart research to help guide the college process and the college research process. Those schools that are on our good list, I mean, and that list could be our Stone Cold Sober list or any of the other lists in the books that you would consider great list. Schools put us on their website, they put us on their letterhead, they put us on all their college admissions material. Schools that get on our less than stellar list, let's say like our party school list, try to marginalize the things that we're saying. I mean, they don't like what we heard from their students, and they try to discredit our survey in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, in that regard, then finding yourself on the ranking of best party school, every college considers it a negative?
Not every school. And actually, we've had some really progressive schools over the last couple of years deal with this, and I think some really productive ways. As I said before, University of Colorado Boulder was our number one school last year. It dropped to the number nine position this year. Right now, it's compulsory for every student entering Colorado Boulder this year to take a drug and alcohol awareness course, which was not there last year. There's been some grumblings with the administration over this year, but I think that it has influenced some great and positive change on that campus.
If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking with Robert Franek, who's the author of the Princeton Review's Best 357 Colleges. We're talking about the party school list at the moment. Bruce joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually attended the two top party schools that were ranked by the Princeton Review, I think a couple of years ago. One was University of Colorado at Boulder, mm-hmm. and the other was University of Wisconsin at Madison. And I really don't know how they came up with those rankings, because my experience was pretty intense intellectually. There was, a group of students that I associated with, but the professors had an interesting tact on that, and that is they kind of understood these rankings, but they made sure that at the end of the first semester, students who didn't apply themselves were put on notice, and that the competition to get to those schools was pretty severe. And I just think that it probably does a disservice to those universities, because they're actually fantastic universities.
Yeah, I mean, just to respond, I couldn't agree more. I mean, just to remind you of the name of the book, it's called The Best 357 Colleges. That's the top 12% of schools in the country. It's a good group to be around. And certainly, my job at Princeton Review allows me to choose the schools that go into Best 357. And throughout the year, we look at curriculum development as well as social development at a specific school. These schools are all wonderful schools academically. However, they can have very active social scenes. And the mission of this book is to make sure that we comment and give information to that college-bound population that they're not going to read about anywhere else. And that happens to be party school, but consumption of alcohol, consumption of drugs on campus. Those are the important things that a student needs to make an informed decision.
Bruce, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Daryl. Daryl's on the line from St. Louis.
Hey there.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you, I'm getting quite a kick out of this, because back in the late 70s, I was trying to go to Western Michigan University, and they were rated as one of the top party schools in the country, and my parents would not let me go. They were not going to pay for me to go to learn how to party, so I ended up going to another university, and believe it or not, found ample time to party.
And learned how to party as well there?
Oh, yeah. Quite a bit.
Do you have reactions like that, Robert Franek, of people who look at your list and make decisions on this particular listing?
Actually, I think that we do. I mean, I think that this is should be a tool for parents and for kids. I would hate for a parent and a student to cross a school off on their list because it happens to have an active social scene on campus. There's so much information in this book through the narrative profile, through all of the other stuff that we sort of pack in there, that should guide some smart research. You should take to task those admissions folks that you're talking with at the SUNY Albany's of the world, but you should find out about the academic experience. You should talk to kids, talk to faculty members. That school could still be a great fit for you academically as well as socially.
Okay. I particularly remember that mm-hmm. we had a lot of information from a lot of different universities, and my dad had things circled, and one of the things that I remember he had circled, they had like a list of, at Western Michigan University, they had a list of parties and things, that events, festivals and stuff like that, and my dad said, why do you want to go to this place? You're not ever going to get to class. You're just going to be going to the music festival or the fraternity festival, and he was just not understanding that that's what I wanted. I wanted to be out in the social atmosphere.
Daryl, I expect you survived.
I did survive, and oddly enough, I'm a partner in a wine company now. So maybe my academic training showed up later in life.
Well, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
And Robert Franek, we wanted to thank you for your time today as well.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Robert Franek is the author of the Princeton Review's Best 357 Colleges, and he joined us from our bureau in New York. Henry Wexler is the director of the College Alcohol Study at the Harvard School of Public Health, and he joins us now from his home in Quincy, Massachusetts. Good of you to be with us.
I'm happy to be here.
What do you make of these party school rankings?
I don't make much of them. As someone who's studied this field for many years now and has done serious surveys, I find that the claims to rank schools as the top 10 or the top 20 are ridiculous.
In any category, including party school?
Yes, I think in any category. The major issue here, since this is based on student responses, is the kind of samples that are drawn at different schools. While it sounds great to have 110,000 students respond, that's only about 300 on the average for each school. And from what I read on the website, that ranges from 100 at some schools to 1,000 at others. The way that samples are drawn at the different schools is not the way that scientific surveys would do it, which is random sampling. But they're picked at some schools provided by administrators who urge students to respond, and at other schools through a variety of other methods. Unless the same method is used at each school, it's impossible to compare the students who respond because we don't know if they're representative of the school. If one school, primarily fraternity people, respond, you're going to have a higher rate of drinking than if you have a religious group respond. So that's a real problem. And the other problem is that most surveys, take presidential preference polls, for example, talk about a margin of error. So when you get a reading on, say, Bush versus Kerry, you get 52% to 46% with a 5% margin of error. And in some cases, you have to say that you can't tell whether one candidate is leading the others. Here you have a listing of 20 schools in order with no ties. This is remarkable. What this does is it tars some schools as being the top school, and that perpetuates that kind of ranking. What's not mentioned or wasn't mentioned in this program is that the data is obtained for 3 consecutive years, so that if a school tries to change, it's going to be very hard to show that change since the respondents from the earlier years are included.
Yet we saw the listing for the, I think it was University of Colorado, Colorado State University, I think, dropped from 1st to 9th after an alcohol awareness program was instituted.
Well, I really wouldn't jump to that conclusion. Maybe a different sample is obtained.
It was the University of Colorado Boulder. I apologize.
No, but I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that because there was a particular program, they automatically reduce their drinking. There may be a variety of other reasons, among which is the method that's used to get the responses.
Are colleges themselves part of the problem? I mean, as Robert Frank Franek said, colleges all the time cite their rankings in good categories, academic standards. Wagner College on Staten Island, for example, says, hey, we have, according to this Princeton Review, one of the most beautiful campuses.
Well, that is a problem. I think colleges take these rankings too seriously. This is a marketing, in my opinion, this is a marketing tool for a company, a brilliant marketing tool. Look, you've got a show devoted to it. There have been all sorts of mentions of it in the press. It's a very successful marketing tool, but it's not a serious survey, and it shouldn't be confused with the actual drinking rates that are available. That's not to say that at some schools where they have large samples, which are random, that they're not reflecting the actual drinking trends. But we don't know at what schools to believe the data and at what schools not to believe.
We do know, however, that drinking is a substantial problem on many college campuses, and we're going to be talking about that issue and party schools when we continue after a short break. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, emails TOTN at npr.org. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about party schools. Our guest, Henry Wexler, the director of the College Alcohol Study at the Harvard School of Public Health, if you'd like to join us. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. Leon is with us from Athens, Ohio.
Hello, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. It's a great show.
Thank you.
In Athens, Ohio is where Ohio University is, and we had a large ranking for a long time in that category of being a party school.
You're currently fifth on the current list.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. However, I think there's a lot of factors that involve what makes a party school reputation. You've always got to look at the fact that you've got young people who are trying to make the rites of passage, and oftentimes that has to do with alcohol consumption and other experiments that they're doing in terms of drugs and things of that nature. You've got the sorority and the fraternity mindset that is trying to pull young people in, and being able to hold your own in terms of partying has influence there. But even more so, the communities, the surrounding communities that make that do business with college students, such as bars and places where we call them watering holes up in the town, have a lot to do with how much of a party school a university or a college town can actually be. And some colleges actually gain prowess and gain student enrollment based on the fact that the student knows when it enrolls in that college that they're going to be able to have a good time outside of their academics. My solution would be for this, is let's do our best to change what a young person sees themselves or would measure themselves as an adult by without alcohol, without drug, without the whole wild partying issue. And maybe perhaps that might be a solution. I'll shut down so you guys can comment.
Okay, Leon, thanks very much for the phone call. Henry Wexler, rite of passage, and also comments about the community outside the school, the bars down the street.
I think we have to approach this from both angles. We have to try to change the attitudes of students about drinking, but we also have to change the alcohol environment in which these colleges are located, where alcohol is pushed at young people at extremely low prices and in large volume. That contributes strongly.
Yeah, ladies' night or dollar beer night or that kind of thing.
But
yeah.
Part of the attitude change, I think, pertains to the way the Princeton Review cites the schools where there isn't a lot of drinking or drugs, stone-cold sober schools. Think of that. There's no fun in that label. There's more fun in the party label. That's a good way of pushing kids to choose the party schools over the stone-cold sober schools.
What about that Leon's last comment that there are some schools who benefit from this party school label by attracting a lot of applicants?
Well, that is unfortunately the case for schools that may not be competitive in other ways. It's too bad they can't compete through academics or enrichment programs.
The University of Alabama was once ranked third on the Princeton Review's party school list. This year, it's not listed at all. Joining us now to talk about what the school did to shed its party reputation is Margaret King, Vice President of Student Affairs at the University of Alabama. She joins us from her office in Tuscaloosa. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
So how'd you do it?
Well, we really don't know. We're not always sure why we're on the list, and so it's a guess as to why we're not. But we believe it was the confluence of several factors. First, in 2002, the University of Alabama worked with the city of Tuscaloosa to calm down the late night and under 21 drinking activity on an area known as the Strip adjacent to the campus. Secondly, we have taken every opportunity that we can to constantly restate and to make decisions based on the primacy of academics. Then the Division of Student Affairs has established a Healthy Campus Initiative, which addresses not only the individual behaviors and individual choices, but is also looking at the environmental factors that lead students toward or away from certain behaviors.
Finally,
one more. I think that I have to give a good bit of credit to our fraternity alumni. who could see the effects of an animal house mentality for their chapters, and they have really stepped up to the plate in changing it.
Was this an embarrassment when the University of Alabama found itself on this list?
I don't think that we see it as an embarrassment, because to say that we were embarrassed, I think, would admit an element of truth into it. I think that we see it more as a nuisance, something that we have to deal with then, that is a distraction from tasks that we would prefer to be doing.
Well, you say if the Princeton Review had found the University of Alabama among its top academic schools, might that not have ended up on the website?
Oh, it probably would have. I think that we all want to tout the good things about our schools, however they are said, just as often as we can.
So you take the good and try to ignore the bad, or discredit it?
Well, I think that what we do is we try to use the good for marketing, just like the list are being used to market the publication. And then when we have the bad, what we try to do is look at it and then go back into our institutional data and really look at what are we doing and what does our data suggest, and then what do we need to take from this in order to improve our campus life.
So did it serve at least as some kind of a wake-up call?
I think that it's not necessarily being on the Princeton Review list that serves as a wake-up call. I think that what we know to be happening in our communities are taken much more seriously by student affairs administrators and college administrators in general.
Okay. Thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Margaret King, Vice President of Student Affairs at the University of Alabama, joined us on the line from Tuscaloosa. Let's get another caller on the line. Rachel is with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First of all, I want to say I love your show. I listen to it all the time because it's right between my classes. So
I take it then you're at school.
Yes. I am a 21-year-old music history student and a sorority, member of a sorority at the University of Arizona in Tucson. And basically, you know, party schools are what you make it to be. You know, you can come to school as a student and want a party, or you can come to school and study. You know, most universities try to weed out those people that come and, you know, spend their time goofing off. And another thing I think about is that, you know, students come to these quote-unquote party schools, and when they leave, they turn into very well-rounded people. Because ultimately, when you go out into the workforce, you know, you'll end up going out to bars afterwards and, you know, relaxing after the day of work. You know, there's a time to study, and then there's a time to party. So
learning how to cope with alcohol is, to some degree, a part of the education.
Basically, yeah. And I think a lot of these party schools want to try and get out the point that, you know, you come to this school and you either sink or swim, but you need to learn how to cope with the alcoholism and the partying every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, and whatnot. So.
Henry Wexler?
Yes.
Do you find that to be true? That, obviously everybody, at some point in your life, probably around the age of 21 somewhere, people are going to encounter alcohol and have to learn how to deal with it one way or the other, whatever decision they make.
Sure, it's part of the real world, and the real world that you can be at a party school, but find a niche for yourself where you don't have to join the party in terms of you're taking drugs. That is an individual choice, and many colleges offer alcohol and drug-free dormitories, for example, as one way not to join the heavy drinking at a school where there's a lot of heavy drinking.
Rachel, thanks very much for the call, and good luck with your studies.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. University of Wisconsin at Madison currently sits third on the Princeton Review's party school rankings. Susan Crowley is the director of a program that targets excessive drinking there, and she joins us now on the phone from her office in Madison. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, it's third on the party school list. Wisconsin also ranked very high in the other surveys for academics. Is the party ranking all that bad?
Well, it is quite a dichotomy because UW-Madison has a really strong academic reputation, a strong research reputation, and I do think that its party reputation is well-deserved.
The other side, though, you suspect not?
Well, I do think that what happens is that if you only think of a party of party school as being a place where you have fun and you have a great experience, then you ignore the negative consequences of partying, which is what we encounter in our community, which are basically physical and sexual assaults, vandalism, academic failure that are a result of excessive partying.
So no joke whatsoever. How serious is the drinking problem there at Madison?
Well, this community and campus are deeply engaged in working on solutions around it and have recognized for some time, with or without the Princeton Review rankings, that we have a serious binge drinking problem on our campus. Our students report that about 62% of them regularly binge drink, which is higher than the national average, which is typically around 44% of college students.
And now you've been working at this. You have to work with the community as well. We've been hearing about that in various respects, particularly with the bars around campus.
Well, exactly. Certainly there is no one specific strategy that will absolutely reduce high-risk drinking on college campuses. So you have to have a number of strategies. One which we are working on fairly aggressively here is to reduce access to cheap alcohol, and particularly cheap alcohol that's targeted to students through late-night drink specials at licensed establishments.
The great majority of college students are under the age of 21.
That's correct.
So obviously fake IDs or a wink and a nod at a lot of these places plays into this.
Fake IDs are certainly a problem on this campus and community, as I'm sure they are nationally. You also have to address social access to alcohol through house parties, which often function as unlicensed taverns. And in those approaches, we've been working with landlords, police, neighborhood associations, and students to both promote safe house parties, but also to provide appropriate enforcement for parties that shouldn't be operating.
And let me ask you again, the ranking, you may not accept its legitimacy, but it's got to cause some sort of a reaction there at the school when the school finds itself on this list.
Well, we've been on the list for a couple of years now, so our reaction is that this doesn't interfere with us continuing our very serious commitment to reducing high-risk drinking on this campus. If anything, when it comes up on an annual basis, I think it gives us all pause to, again, consider the effectiveness of our efforts and what additional efforts we might want to take to continue to reduce this perception and reality on our campus and community.
Susan Crowley, thanks very much for being with us today.
Sure.
We appreciate it. Susan Crowley is Director of Prevention Services at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She joined us on the phone from Madison, Wisconsin. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Harry. Harry's calling from Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I graduated from Gonzaga here in Spokane 2 years ago. And then I worked as an AmeriCorps member for the last 2 years on campus, actually in the area of student life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it just seems that to try and stop college drinking, and no one's proposed that, but to try and stop it is quite ridiculous. And one of the things that I've realized from my college experiences and the people that, you know, the work studies I had was, you know, that people are going to drink. And it's really a time of trying to find purpose, you know, and what drives you and motivates you. So it's just kind of a natural stage to go through, but, you know, maybe implementing mentoring programs where, you know, seniors and juniors can kind of show the ways maybe to freshmen and sophomores, that might be a solution in some colleges.
Henry Wexler, you've written about the idea that maybe it needs to be put out to a lot of new students that, no, a lot of kids on campus don't drink, and they certainly don't drink to excess.
Well, it's most students don't binge drink nationally. 56% don't, and the issue is not stopping drinking, but it's stopping the kind of drinking that gets students into trouble through hurting themselves or hurting others in their environment. So it's how much they drink that is a key. I don't think most people who are trying to deal with this problem are prohibitionists and are trying to stop drinking. But drinking often leads, when it is in such heavy quantities, to all sorts of problems. And that's what people are trying to cope with.
Harry, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about Drinking on Campus, Party Schools. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller up. Craig is with us from Ithaca, New York.
Hey, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I went to a college that was listed on that review, or at least in Playboy, and it's SUNY Cortland in Cortland, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the people that I went to school with drank heavily, more heavily than I did, and I wound up becoming an alcoholic and having to get into recovery, and have since returned to Cortland to finish my bachelor's and am now getting my master's there in education. But I guess my point is that those people who are going to drink to excess and become alcoholics or do damage to themselves or others by way of alcohol are going to do it regardless of whether they're on college campuses or not. I don't believe that, you know, colleges, I don't believe that colleges provide any more access than any place else on the planet.
Henry Wexler, go ahead.
I wanted to comment on that. We found that college students do drink more than their former high school peers who did not go to college. So there is something about the college environment that is conducive to more drinking. And that includes both the attitudes at colleges and also the way alcohol is sold and pushed at college students. For this reason, we need to do something about the marketing of alcohol.
Well, one thing I wanted to say, Mr. Wexler, is that I appreciate your comments on the statistics of the Princeton Review. I believe in doing surveys through random sampling as opposed to selecting who you're going to get answers from. And I just think that the Princeton Review should take a look at what they're doing. If they're going to provide these kinds of statistics to people and have anybody believe in them, then, in fact, they need to do random sampling as opposed to what they've been doing.
I agree. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Craig.
Thanks, Neil.
We just have a few seconds left with you, Henry Wexler, but I did want to ask, 35 years ago, the drinking age in many places was 18. Is it better or worse now that the age is 21?
Raising the drinking age has led to approximately 800 fewer traffic fatalities each year, and that's by now about 20,000 or so lives saved. So there's no question that the drinking age at 21 has helped. People have tried to point to countries where the drinking age is 18 and say that there's less of a problem there. But if we read the papers about the binge drinking in Britain and in other countries in Europe, we see that they have lots of problems.
Henry Wexler, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Henry Wexler is director of the College Alcohol Study at the Harvard School of Public Health. He joined us on the phone from his home in Quincy, Massachusetts. When we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking about another aspect of life on college campuses. From traditional marching bands to scrambling, halftime on the college football field can look and sound very different depending on where you are. If you've been a member of either kind of band, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.